Yeah, Friday. What's up? Welcome in. It's August in 2025. August 1st, just after 2 o'clock. We're Grant and Danny, and we're taking you all the way up to 6:30 on the Fan. Got a great show planned for you. In about 25 minutes, the interim general manager of the Nationals, Mike DiBartolo, joins us to discuss the trade deadline yesterday. He made five trades. He did not trade Mackenzie Gore. We'll get to the bottom of everything the Nats did and didn't do. And Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk has thoughts on the Terry McLaurin trade request, as well as the news that we're waiting on, and that is the future of a stadium in D.C. Looks like a vote is going to go well for the Commanders today after a couple council members changed their tune over striking a deal on some of their labor
demands. Yeah.
So everything looks smooth. We're just awaiting the conclusion now and what seems like a formality that they're going to get the eight yes votes that they need.
Dude, pretty big summer Friday for your pals, right? I mean, usually we got a little training camp. Like, who looks good at training camp right now? Well, you guys were out there a couple days. Who's looking good? That's normally what we're doing. We got a superstar holding out. Our most productive player over the last decade or so is, you know, demanding trades, which we'll get to in a second. The place that the team is going to play for the next several decades is up for grabs and might actually might be steamrolling towards a resolution on that today. Like,
the vote
that's pretty
today,
big.
After months and months and months of talking about a possible vote. Yeah, and the GM of the Nationals and Mike DiBartolo the day after the trade deadline with a lot of news on their front that we need his thoughts on. So, yeah, it's a nice little show. We're excited about it. Let's start with the Terry McLaurin trade demand because it came out quite literally about 5 minutes after we got off the air yesterday. Nice little kick to the tuchus.
Wasn't that nice?
For your pals.
Wasn't that fun?
I don't understand the timing of that announcement from him or his agent.
It's terrible timing by him and his agent.
So, the agent clearly leaks this to, I think it was Jordan Schultz of Fox Sports who broke it initially. Doesn't really matter who it is. Schefter shortly after that came out with it. But generally, you want to leak things during the day, during the business hours, when all the national TV shows and radio shows are live and everyone can talk about it in the news cycle all day long, rather than right after the close of business, where by the time the morning rolls around, in D.C., it's still huge news, but there's a bunch of other things that are going to be happening. It's out of the news cycle. But on top of that, it's a little bit of a deep cut, nerdier thing. There is no access at the facility today.
Uh-huh.
So if you're the agent, part of what you're hoping to do is create a little bit of a circus. You are trying to make the story in Ashburn that Terry McLaurin requested a trade. And that'll be the story tomorrow when the media is back out there on a Saturday. Again, not a weekday, not when everyone's plugged in on their computers and trying to get all the news. Now it's a weekend storyline, which is better for the team anyway. And it's almost going to be 48 hours after the request for the trade. So just naturally in this minute-to-minute news cycle, a little bit of the fervor and the intensity dies down. So I just think from a sure business standpoint, like Agent 101, I was really surprised that they leaked it when they did.
Frankly, it's amateurish. It shows a lack of kind of understanding. Because what's the point of it to announce it? You could do that internally and have those conversations. Why do you have a press conference at Eastern Motors where your job's your credit? Why are you signing autographs after practice every day? Why are you staging pictures and video of you and Terry talking after practices? You want it to go viral. You want people to be talking about it. You're trying to do your public pressure campaign. It just sort of shows you that it's not like this guy knows everything and has a total grasp on reality and what's supposed to be happening. This is a misstep, quite frankly. The idea is, no one can do business without Terry McLaurin. Everybody's so distracted. We're pressuring the team. You have to sign him. You did them a favor by announcing it in this way. Now, again, the crux of it is the trade demand. We'll get to all that. But it just kind of shows you, I have his agent filed in the maybe not the best category. I've kind of deduced that and figured it out.
I don't know that everything that they're doing at the park is for show. There's not a whole lot of places, honestly, where they're going to meet where the media is not going to see it. It's not like his agent's going in the building and can talk with him in the locker room necessarily. He's out there at practice, basically in the VIP area where families are. And just like the families come out on the field, there are other agents out on the field. We're just not interested in taking pictures of that interaction. So I don't think every time that they have a quick powwow or they have a conversation or whether he's updating him on a conversation he had with Peters or they're just talking about, you know, his mental and how Terry's holding up and how things are going, I don't think that's for show 100%. I mean, could they have text and phone conversations? Of course. Does Buddy Baker, the agent, have to be there? I guess not. I'm not saying it's 0% that they don't want to be seen. I think they're happy with the coverage that they're getting, as well they should be, by the way. That's kind of my point with announce this yesterday at noon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do it on Wednesday, as far away from the end of the week as possible. Like, there were strategies they could have implemented and executed, but just surprised by when they released it. And by that, I mean leaked it. Could it have come out anyway? No, in other words, Jordan Schultz said within the last 30 minutes he had requested the trade, which means evening yesterday is when the agent told Peters Terry wants out. I don't think the team would have sent that to Adam Schefter,
right,
who seems to be the one that they go to with things, or Ian Rappaport or anybody else, because there's no real benefit for them to put out there that Terry McLaurin's requesting a trade. It's possible, and if that happens, okay, so be it. It wasn't the best situation ever, but at least you didn't set yourself up for a bad situation.
Mm-hmm.
You wait till first thing this morning, and it's 7 a.m. you send that out, and now it's the number one story in the news cycle for the next several hours. So I was a little surprised by that, but I guess we're burying the lead here, which is, what a development, man. I'm not surprised that he requested a trade. I've been saying for the last couple of weeks, it was actually odd that he hadn't requested a trade, as upset as he is. When you're holding out, normally you've already requested a trade, or you do it at the exact same time. When you're holding in, again, generally, see Trey Hendrickson, you've already gone public and said you'd like to be traded. So it was very strange to me. Those two things are normally coinciding and, you know, somewhat working in the same direction. I thought this would have happened a couple weeks ago. But when they didn't do it, it is their last card they can put down. It is their last play. And so if you're waiting, then doing it now is odd to me, because when you didn't play that card, at least you could have waited closer to the start of the season. I just feel like he's got nothing left now, McLaurin and the agent. You've done your holdout. You ended it very quickly. You've done your hold-in. We're almost a week into that at this point. Everything's kind of calming down on that front. He still comes out and signs the autographs. But Danny, as an example, after days of us following him around with our cameras and chasing him up to the building so he could say we're taking it day by day, yesterday, he was signing autographs for 30 minutes. There wasn't a single camera over there recording him. Like, it got to a point where it was no longer a bigger deal that he was doing it than whatever was going on at the facility. So that's kind of where we are on the hold-in front. And now the last thing is to request a trade, which is a bigger deal than holding out or holding in.
Right.
This is the first time he has made the public statement to say, I'd rather have my money somewhere else than just be here on a cheaper deal. But where's this thing headed? I think still nowhere. I mean, the team's not trading Terry McLaurin.
Yeah, here's how the conversation would go for me. Hey, we'd like to request a trade. No. Would you like to talk about anything else, or do you want to keep holding out or in or whatever? I mean, it's pretty simple. At this juncture, there's no way I can replace a wide receiver one plus an incentive for me to do it. So no, there's no trade. Now, if you go out there as the agent and bring me something amazing, we can have a conversation. But I don't think that's going to happen. I think everybody's pretty much set. I might get a third rounder or something like that. Maybe a low second for Terry McLaurin. That's not worth it to me. I've got a win now window. We want him to play football. He's under contract for 25 this year. We could franchise him for 28 next year. We got you. So if you want to play football, it's for us. What else do you want to do? I mean, it's pretty simple to me.
Yeah, I went through the recent history of just receivers who have requested trades, but star players at other positions have done it as well. And they don't get traded. It doesn't really happen. There are certainly examples where it has, but T. Higgins wanted a trade, requested it from the Bengals, was every bit as angry with Cincinnati as McLaurin is with Washington. It was actually a little bit uglier for longer. I think that's just because McLaurin is having a hard time being the bad guy somewhat. But T. Higgins is still a Cincinnati Bengal as we sit here and talk now, after 2 years of him and the team being in a game of chicken. And he's on a new deal, by the way. He actually signed a new contract there. Brandon Ayuk, remember, requested a trade from the San Francisco 49ers last year. He and Jaden Daniels were like flirting with their videos and their texts, and he's got pictures of Commanders practice somehow and whatever was going on. And those guys are boys, right? He wants a trade from San Francisco. It pretty clearly wanted to be here in Washington. Let me just see what team he's on. Oh, he's still on the 49ers, and he's got a new contract. Deebo Samuel is now on Washington and was traded this offseason. It's been a couple of years since he started asking for a trade and agitating to get out of San Francisco. And he didn't get the deal when he asked for it, and he played that season for the 49ers because you just don't have the ability to force them to trade you. The chances that they actually trade McLaurin are remote. If I got one text from a Commanders fan yesterday or one comment, I must have got 50 from people who were sad or, you know, crying emoji or it's all over, Terry's gone. I'm going, no. These are two very, very different things. I can request to be in a certain teacher's class. The school does not have to grant it. I can request to my wife, hey, I'd like to sleep in tomorrow, and I'd like to go to the Nats game at 4:05. And she could say, that's a good request.
Thank you for your request.
They have no reason to grant this. I couldn't come up with one legitimate reason why the Commanders would or should trade Terry McLaurin. If they do, Danny, your receiver room is substandard and below average, and you can't accomplish any of your goals. Oh, by the way, he's under contract this year.
Yeah.
He has to show up. And you have the hammer you can slam still for next year, which is a franchise tag. So there's really no reason for them to grant him this trade. Zero.
Again, especially at this stage, at this juncture. This is a professional human being trying to better his livelihood. So I'm not diminishing that. I'm giving you the analogy, okay? So I'm not comparing him to my children, all right? It's a grown man. But when my child says, I'm not going to brush my teeth, you are. As you can get as mad as you want. You can agitate as much as you want. You can throw as many things as you want. You can scream and yell and throw your temper tantrum. In this case, it's a professional one. But that's what this is. This is a professional temper tantrum. And again, it's not, you know, he's not impugning anybody. He's not ripping anybody's character or, you know, lighting fire to things on his way out yet. But that's what this amounts to. The team has the hammer here, as you already said. And I keep coming back to this. This has been my salient point throughout this entire process. 25 this year, 28 next year, according to overthecap.com. Maybe it's 29, maybe it's 28.5 for the franchise tag. And after that, we can have a conversation. There is no reason for the team to go above those totals unless you buy the argument, but it's Terry, and we love him, and he's different. The team clearly doesn't view it that way. So in terms of their negotiating leverage, this to me is the, okay, man, now we're just playing the waiting game. That's the last lever you can pull, is the trade me. No, what else you got? I mean, that's how quickly that would be dismissed for me if I was Danny Peters.
Yeah, my opinion on all of this has not changed at all in the last month. I still feel the same way. I think McLaurin is asking for a little bit more than market and probably what the team needs to pay him. I think because of his age and the history of receivers at that age, the team is trying to keep him a little bit below market, but around old guy market, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Like, he's not old guy experienced. His agent is saying, look at years 7, 8, and 9, guys get paid. And they're going, yeah, but you're older than guys who go into years 7, 8, and 9. So I think, as is generally the case when two sides are far apart, what he should actually be making is a little bit in the middle from what we're anticipating or I guess assuming these offers are right now. I think the offers are 25-ish from the Commanders, and he wants 34 or 33 or something like that. That's a big gap between those two.
Yes, it is.
If you split the difference, right, you're talking about being around $29 million. I think that's probably what it should end up being. When you look at the fact that the age of 1,000-yard receivers, for the last time that they did it, you know, DeAndre Hopkins, 31, Julio Jones, after 30, didn't do it, Antonio Brown, 30, A.J. Green, 29, Amari Cooper, 29, Keenan Allen, 31, Cooper Kupp, 28. The guys have fallen off right around where McLaurin is, and Adam Peters knows this better than anybody. But what I have also said the entire time, Danny, is I actually do believe in the idea that McLaurin is deserving, based on what he's done for this organization, in a slight overpay. So whatever he's worth as a number, as a punch it into a computer by his age, by his production, by his experience so far in the league, and everything that a computer would spit out, zero emotion, not knowing that Terry McLaurin has been the team guy.
Mm-hmm.
I would give him a couple million more than that because he's Terry McLaurin. Because of my whole Commander rhetoric, we take care of our guys rhetoric, culture first rhetoric, all this stuff that they've been selling since day one when they got here. So I would have no problem paying him $31, $32 million a year. It's a couple million dollars difference. The guaranteed money over a few years we're talking about is $4 to $6 million. That's worth it to me to get this thing done and to not have this massive distraction that is a blight on an otherwise flawless operation for the last couple of years. I would 100% do a slight overpay. But they aren't even close enough yet to do a slight
overpay. To do that, yeah.
So am I annoyed and frustrated like everybody else? Sure, absolutely. But I don't view this as perilous. I don't view this as irreparable. Because if nothing happens, all we've got to do is wait a few weeks and the dude's going to play football. I just refuse to believe he won't. How would he not? Make the case for me that he doesn't show up and play football eventually. What is the alternative? That you go full Le'Veon Bell? That you sit out a football season? That you pretend to be hurt for the whole year? He's not doing that. And that's the problem for him and his agent. They've got you between a rock and a hard place.
Yeah, it's the CBA. That is the immovable thing here that is closing. The timeline is closing in on this side. And there's only so many levers they can pull. And they're allowed to, by the way. And I still don't even begrudge this. I do whatever you can to get as much money as you can. But at the end of the day, why do we talk about contracts? Why do we talk about how much players make? Not to be, quote unquote, in their pockets or whatever. It's not like I don't want these guys playing this violent game to earn a wonderful living. We do it because it's about team building. The reason you and I don't want to speak for you, but I'm going, God, they paid that much to Javon Kinlaw? They're paying him 15 plus over the next couple of seasons. This one's a little bit cheaper for a cap hit. But why do I care about that? Not because I don't want Javon Kinlaw to be financially successful. It's because that means I can't go get the next Bobby Wagner if he's being paid $5 million too much. It means that, instead of Will Harris, it's, you know, another special team Sam that I'm hoping elevates to the strong safety role, et cetera. It's about team building. We care about the salary cap, not because we're in people's pockets. We don't want guys to do well. It's about making our Sundays fun. It's about building the best possible team.
Sure.
That's, to me, the whole point of why I go, now when we're talking about somebody earning as much as they possibly can, I'm going, it's not unlimited, right? I want Terry to succeed, but at a certain point, you're going, okay, you've done all you can here. You've made your point. We're not trading you. They got you by the short hairs. You got to come play football here. That's the inescapable part of this for me.
It is okay to overpay a guy who's the face of your franchise, though. The idea that they have to do this with everybody, of course they wouldn't or shouldn't do that. You always say, oh, well, if you do it with him, it's a slippery slope. No, it's not. There's one guy like this who has been the face of this franchise. There's one guy when he walks out of the building other than Jaden Daniels that thousands of kids wearing his jersey gather around for his autograph. There's one of these guys. And it is very reasonable to just say, you know what, let's take care of this guy. When you're pretending like as soon as you draft Johnny Newton, he's Mr. Commander and he comes out in a Mandalorian helmet and vest because you got the commander tag. What we do here is we find commanders. Well, you have the lieutenant commander and you're unwilling to pay him. I saw a great tweet today that's actually really funny. And it's more, you know, snarky and kind of strawman-y than it is accurate. But I think there actually is a decent point here. This guy, Jimmy Kemsky on Twitter, who covers the Eagles, said, by my count this offseason, the Commanders signed, traded, or re-signed 20 players who are either 30 years old or will be 30 by the end of the season. Got to draw the line at Terry McLaurin, though. Now, most of these are one-year deals for not a lot of money. It's very different when you're talking about guaranteeing someone $50, $60 million. But nobody has been more pro-old players
right,
since he took the job than Adam Peters. He's looking for 30-year-olds, it feels like. Bobby Wagner, you're 34. Too bad you're not 40. Can we get you again for two more years? Von Miller's available? Sir, Von Miller's almost 40 years
That's
old.
That's exactly
Who
right.
Who cares? He's a commander. You know, they do nothing but add 30-year-olds. They're like, we really like this guy, but he's only 26. Call us back in 5 years. They're the oldest team in the league, but they draw the line at Terry McLaurin. Now, again, it's fun to say that. I get that this is a little
bit different. Yeah, if he wants 1 year, $6 million, I'd love to do it right now.
Right. They'd be happy to give him Bobby Wagner's contract. I get it. But it is just a little bit funny that they're now the flag in the ground. We can't possibly pay the old guy team. You're the oldest team in the league.
And it's not close.
You pay every old guy who's ever old guyed. That's all you do is pay old guys since you guys got here. They are doing good business. They're making a smart decision. I think they're playing this correctly if it's not Terry McLaurin. If it's just unnamed player, just, we don't know it's the Commanders. We don't know it's McLaurin. You're watching the Broncos negotiate with Cortland Sutton, and this is what's happening. You would say the team's right, the player's not necessarily. But this is a slightly unique circumstance, and where we've disagreed a little bit is you're saying the fact that he's Terry and the last several years shouldn't matter at all. I'm not saying they should matter 100%, but they should matter a good bit. And that's where I'm perfectly okay when the cap is a couple hundred million dollars and growing all the time to overpay this guy by a few million dollars when you're not paying your quarterback anything. The notion that they can't build a team or they can't still be really good because McLaurin's making 32 and not 28, that's silly. I mean, it just is. And the guaranteed money over several years, it can all be finagled and worked around. We see quarterbacks get paid ridiculous contracts all the time, and somehow the team keeps showing up on Sunday. They could absolutely figure this out. Now, if he wants 42, if he wants 40, wants Ja'Marr Chase money, get out of here. Get out of my office and call me back when you're serious. But that's not really what we're talking about, I don't think. I think it's 32, 33 million versus 28 or 29, which might be a good place to actually pay him. But after Courtland Sutton got what he got, as soon as that happened, you knew, oh, this is not ending anytime soon.
No.
Because Terry McLaurin and the agent had a really bad day when they found out what he got.
Yeah, I believe that Adam Schefter conjecture or whatever, that he's well over DK Metcalf in terms of his demands, and Washington's probably slightly over Courtland Sutton in terms of their offer. I think there's an enormous gap.
I think well over is like a half million to a million. Based on everything that I've gathered, I have no reason to believe they're trying to reset the market. It's possible. I would believe maybe that he's upwards of close to 35 million, which is, you know, a million and a half over. I can't imagine any more than that. And if that's true, that's what you're asking for because they're dug in on 25 and you're trying to get to 30, and that's just how a deal works. But I think if you gave his agent truth serum and you said, what would you guys sign for? I think you could get this thing done at 31 change, 32, 32 and a half, something like that. I just don't know that the Commanders are ever going to get there because they don't feel like they have to.
Right.
A lot more on Terry McLaurin. We'll get some of your feedback as we go today on The Fan. But the Nats had a trade deadline yesterday. They did not trade Mackenzie Gore. We want to find out why they didn't and how the trade deadline worked on that front. They did make five trades. We'll talk to interim GM Mike DiBartolo of the Nationals for the first time on Grant and Danny next. Grant and Danny on The Fan. Let's go to the Rude guest hotline the day after the trade deadline. Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV, to talk to the Nats interim general manager Mike DiBartolo, who just put the finishing touches on his first deadline as an acting general manager after many years working under Mike Rizzo. And he's kind enough to hop on with us here to discuss what the Nats did and didn't do. Mike, thank you for the time. It's Grant and Danny. How are you?
Absolutely. Doing well, guys. How are you guys doing?
Doing great, man.
How different was yesterday for you? Give us an idea just in the past of what your role was and how involved you were with Mike and what that was like yesterday. Were you the only one working the phones, or was there someone in that DiBartolo role from the past that was kind of handing you the phone when something was almost done? Like, how did it actually work?
Yeah, you know, it was in some ways a lot the same because I've been heavily involved in the past and been in that room for, 10 plus years, But obviously, when you're making the decisions, it's a little bit of a different story. But I was working the phones, most of the time myself. And, I was doing that in the past heavily as well. So, not a huge change in some of the day-to-day, like minute by minute. But, when you're making the final call and obviously you're setting the priorities and, making those final decisions, it was, a little bit different and exciting and excited about the guys we got back and the strong talent, the way we were able to build the farm system a little bit further and hopefully make things better for the future.
What was the theme for you guys yesterday? Just in terms of that, was it the priority to widen the depth in the farm system, to try to grab a couple guys that you think maybe marquee? Just sort of give me a feel for what you went into yesterday and maybe the past week or so as you've made several moves. What was kind of the main theme there, Mike?
Yeah, the big picture goal was just to bolster, get as much talent, future talent as we could in whatever way we could. So it wasn't sort of, hey, target one guy, it was, just upside and building depth in the farm system, however we could do it, and just get the best prospects we could. So whether it was pitching, you know, with guys like Eric Swan and Sean Paul Lignan from the Dodgers and Josh Randall and RJ Sales from the Tigers and the Finnegan trade, those are arms we're really excited about. But we also got some position players, you know, Ronnie Cruz, an infielder, young infielder in the Soroka trade from the Cubs, and Christian Franklin, and a really versatile outfielder from the Cubs. Jake Eater, a major league arm, you know, pitching the majors in the Chafin Garcia trade. So, you know, tried to just get value and talent wherever we could, and just build out the depth a little bit further throughout the system.
Mike, another question as to how the deadline actually works, and I guess every situation could be different, but do you highlight players you really like, either based on your databases analytically? You said you use more of kind of a numbers data approach this time around, or, you know, with pro scouts that see someone and call you. I'll use Lignan as an example because he's such a talented prospect. Like, is that someone where you guys go, all right, we want this guy, let's see if we can figure out a way to get him from the Dodgers? Or do the Dodgers call you about Cole, and then when you get into their system, you find some guys you like? Like, what happens first?
Yeah, it's much more, it's the latter. You know, so, you know, we've got some guys, you know, certainly the guys that were on expiring contracts, you know, the Soroka, Finnegan, the Rosario, you know, and then areas where, you know, we have a little bit more of organizational depth, you know, and a little bit more of a logjam, like in the situation of Alex Cole in the outfield, where we feel like we have several talented outfielders. You know, teams will call us on these guys, and that's usually the way it works, is, you know, teams call and say, hey, we're interested in, you know, Michael Soroka. We're looking, you know, for another starter. Like, what are you guys thinking? And we'll dig into the, you know, it's obviously a lot of work, and, you know, great job by our whole front office staff and our scouts on the ground. And, you know, we'll dig into those organizations and kind of try to find that sort of sweet spot where, okay, this guy, you know, this guy's a good pitcher. He's, you know, in terms of what we're giving up, but it's on an expiring contract. Let's find, you know, some interesting prospects that we think can really help the system, and, you know, that have performed well, that have some attributes we like, you know, in our
but
in
do
a
you
line
have like, sorry to jump in. Do you have like a, I'd imagine you guys don't have portfolios on like every player in the minor leagues at AA. So I'm just like,
we have information on every professional player, you know, on in every organization. And so we'll go through and, you know, we have, you know, performance information. We have scouting information. We have, you know, kind of value information on kind of how we sort of prep out these guys. And we'll talk through those names. Okay. Like, you know, in this range, you know, Ronnie Cruz, we really like, we have a good scouting report on him. He's performed well in rookie ball. He's young, he's athletic, he hits the ball really hard. He has good knowledge of the strike zone. He's athletic, he has a good arm. He can put, like, you know, these are all conversations, you know, in more depth, obviously. And we'll kind of talk through, all these guys and try to come to a consensus of who we think fits best and who we want to ask for, you know, from the organization. And then you go back and forth with that team and try to see if you can line up on some guys. So these are guys that we highlighted and feel really good about. And, you know, ultimately, you know, to get this major league talent that clubs were seeking, you know, we were able to get these guys in return.
Mike DeBartolo with us here on Grant and Danny. So, Mike, I you know, looking at the transactions, all makes a lot of sense to me. All the hotel room guys, you know, the guys that probably aren't going to buy here that we're renting, you know what I mean? Just here short term, the Andrew Chapins, Luis Garcias of the world, totally makes a lot of sense to me. I would have lost a lot of money if I'd gone into yesterday saying that Josh Bell wouldn't have been traded. I was really, really surprised by that. I love Josh Bell. He's a great dude. I think he should be either run for office or be a college professor or something like that. He can do whatever he wants.
Sure.
I was pretty surprised by that. I'd love for you to walk us through that.
Yeah, look, you know, for the guys that were on expiring deals and we were very open-minded to opportunities for them to go to a winner and chase a ring, and that's something we were very open-minded to, and ultimately nothing came together for those guys.
Would you have taken like even a lesser deal? You maybe don't want to get into specifics, but should we assume that to mean there just wasn't much of a market?
You know, I don't want, you know, we, I would just say we were very open-minded to moving those guys.
All right, the one guy we haven't asked about and probably could have and should have started the conversation with is Mike DeBartolo's with us, is Mackenzie Gore. There was so much leading up to the deadline in terms of smoke on Gore. Did you actually have conversations on Gore with teams, or was that just rumors, and did any of them materialize in any kind of serious discussions?
Yeah, I mean, when you have a player as talented as Mackenzie, you know, an all-star who's controllable for years, you know, teams call, and, you know, it's our job to listen and evaluate every opportunity that's brought before us. So certainly, you know, when teams call, and they did, you know, we listen and we discuss it. You know, throughout the organization as to kind of what makes sense for us. And ultimately, you know, we value Mackenzie very highly. He's a great pitcher. And, you know, we just weren't able to line up on something there, and think he's a really important part of the club. And it's really not, you know, when you look at what happened in the market, it wasn't much of an outlier relative to some other teams that had some really talented pitchers out there that were also controllable that didn't move on some other teams. And so, you know, we value Mackenzie highly and think really highly of him, and just nothing came together on that.
Yeah, right at the deadline yesterday when we found out that Mackenzie Gore hadn't been traded, I even think on the air, I kind of wondered, could you guys not get the deal you wanted, or maybe ownership wanted to hang on to him? And as last night went on and I looked around, it didn't seem like a lot of the starting pitchers got moved. So I guess I would just get a thought from you on the starting pitching market and maybe why it didn't materialize. But also, is that fair to say that it wasn't that ownership said we're keeping Mackenzie Gore, it was just that you didn't get a deal that you thought was good enough to trade an all-star number one type starter?
Yeah, I can't speak for other teams. I mean, again, for us, you know, we had conversations organizationally. You know, I keep ownership involved and aware of all the conversations I'm having, and we had really productive conversations there, and they had good questions, and they want to win. You know, yeah, again, so ultimately nothing was brought to us that, you know, we had to be extraordinarily motivated to move a guy like Mackenzie Gore, who's an all-star and just an incredibly talented pitcher. And there was nothing that compelled us to do that ultimately.
Mike, also, we haven't had a chance to speak with you since the draft. Would love kind of your thoughts about this kind of whirlwind month or so of player acquisition, you know, feeding your system there for the Nationals. Yeah. Just kind of give us your 30,000 foot view there.
Yeah, I think we've made a lot of progress and accomplished a lot in 3 to 4 weeks. I appreciate the question. I mean, when you look at how much talent we've added to the organization in the last, you know, 3+ weeks, you know, Eli Willett's the number one pick in the draft, a switch hitting shortstop with a great approach at the plate, who's a talented hitter, who's a elite defender, and you can go through the list. Ethan Petrie with a, you know, big power bat, you know, some really talented high school arms in Miguel Semien Jr. and Coy James and Landon Harmon, Coy James being a, you know, infielder. You know, those five guys, it's a huge amount of talent to add to the organization. And then you add in, you know, the guys we got at the deadline, several talented pitchers, some position players. So, you know, just in the last 3 weeks, I think we've added a lot of talent that's really going to benefit the Nationals over the long term. And I feel really good about that.
Yeah. I mean, oftentimes we shouldn't, you know, full, you know, Chris Farley, where we bring someone on and just tell them how awesome everything was that they did. But the draft, I was so happy with. It seemed like you guys had a plan. And look, a lot of these guys that you took earlier are teenagers. It's lottery tickets in high school. There's just no way to know with those first five rounds worth of players that you took if they're going to become the players you want them to be or not. But you went in with a plan, and to get Harmon and Simi and James after you go Willits and Petrie, you guys had to be elated. Was that kind of all telegraphed before it started, or how much of that is kind of figuring things out as you go?
No, it's a great question, and I appreciate the kind words too. I mean, it went exactly as how we hoped. You know, quite honestly, it went exactly as we had hoped. It wasn't telegraphed per se. You know, we didn't, you know, Willits was the number one guy on our board, and, you know, to be able to get him and sign him at a number that allowed us to get several other talents that we had really circled in the draft as guys we really wanted. You know, you don't know that's, you know, possible until the draft unfolds. And it really did unfold, exactly as we would have hoped, to get, you know, so much upside, and not just, you know, the number one guy on our board, but then several other guys, you know, second, third, fourth rounds that, you know, the talent, you know, especially in some of those later rounds, and we, you know, paid those guys above slot bonuses, but the talent was way above where they were drafted, you know, in my opinion. And so we were just really ecstatic as well as to how that all played out.
Interim GM of the Nats, Mike DiBartolo. I know you got to jump. We'll let you out on this, Mike. You've had about a month here, and in a short order with the draft and with free, and now the trade deadline, I mean, a lot was thrown on your plate as a first-time acting general manager. If this was an audition and you move five guys, four of which were rentals, or six guys, five rentals and one that was controllable for 10 new players to the system, and then the draft we just talked about, I know it's not about you, but you got to feel pretty good about what you've shown as a GM here over the last month as a candidate for the job.
Oh, well, thanks. I mean, it's a credit to the staff around and a whole team effort, you know, both the scouts and the front office staff, and everybody's been working incredibly hard. And it's been very exciting and rewarding to see how motivated everybody is and how hard everybody's working and the great job everybody else is doing. So, you know, I had enough on my plate. You know, as you said, it's a whirlwind between jumping right in with the draft and deadline. So haven't even thought about, you know, the implications of any of that other than just excited about the talent we brought in for the Nats. So, but I really appreciate the kind words.
Mike, thank you for joining us, man. Appreciate the time. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thanks. Thanks, guys. Enjoyed it.
Mike DiBartolo, the interim general manager with the Nationals in the wake of yesterday's trade deadline, discussing some of the moves the Nats made. They trade six players out. Five were players that were leaving or weren't under contract beyond this year. They get 10 players they add to the minor league system, including three in their top 15 via MLB pipeline. They did okay, considering they really didn't trade much.
Right, they didn't give up a lot.
Their biggest asset was Alex Cole,
uh-huh.
And you flood the system with more talent. I still am willing to rave about the draft. I just thought the execution of the plan was phenomenal. We'll see. They're going to go out and shop for executives and managers, but the Bartolo's acquitted himself well as data guy, which is, you know, movement a lot of people have wanted to see for a long time.
I'll tell you this real quick. Everybody I've ever spoken to where his name has come up has had glowing things to say about him.
He's just a worker,
in all walks.
Man.
Yeah. And all, regardless of what job you had with the Nationals or were dealing with him, they've been very impressed with that guy.
He's very well liked.
Yeah.
He is in anonymity in the shadows, just worked really hard for a long time. It's hard generally not to like people who get very little credit and just do a lot of work. And that's kind of been his role as Rizzo's right-hand man for an extended period of time. Terry McLaurin wants to be traded. The Commanders are awaiting a vote that could grant them a big step toward a stadium in D.C. We're covering it all on The Fan. Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk in 15 minutes. Bye, Katie. Come and say hi. Welcome back, Grant and Danny on The Fan. It is football time in America. Of course, the trade deadline for baseball having come yesterday. Mike DiBartolo of the Nats just hopped on. If you missed that interview, grab it at thefandc.com. We do have Mike Florio coming up in about 10 minutes. We'll have Albert Breer in the back half of the show. I'm texting with him now. He had a nice thread today on McLaurin. He's been pretty plugged in on everything going on with Terry, his agent, the team. The debate now, Danny, is does the request of a trade really change anything? It doesn't feel like it. Now, I think it's a huge deal. I was on with Linnell because I had not left the building yet. Because remember how it came out right after our show ended?
Right.
Nice little kick to the tuchus. So I walked in and went on with Linnell, and he said, this is a formality, right? And I said, well,
it is and it isn't.
Maybe, but this is a huge development. It's a big, big deal. He has not previously said, and I don't mean verbally, I mean with his actions, I'm okay not playing for the Commanders. What he has said publicly is, I want to be a Commander for life. I want to feel valued. They need to pay me. By demanding a trade, what you're saying, Danny, is, I don't really care if it's you. I've earned money and I want my money. Now, he's trying to get it here. That's the point I think people missed when earlier on, 2 weeks ago in the offseason, I was saying, I can't believe he hasn't requested a trade. And people were yelling, well, he wants to play here. What's so complicated about that? He doesn't want to be traded. It doesn't mean when you request a trade that he's not demanding it. He's not saying, I won't play for you. That's the opposite, I think, of what he wants. He wants money. He prefers it to be here. But this is a bigger deal than what was 100% a lock that he was going to hold out. 100% a lock eventually that you're going to hold in. You don't necessarily have to demand the trade. Most of the time, guys do. Mm-hmm. He had stayed above it. Car dealership, Eastern Motors, he goes, we're not really there yet. That's pretty far. I don't need to do that. His agent was standing there the other day. People were talking to him. Hey, really? You guys haven't requested a trade? It's not at that spot yet. We got there.
I guess it is now. Yeah, I mean, to me, this is, it's more symbolic than it is a line in the sand. And what I guess what I mean is, nothing changes from the negotiating perspective. This is sort of the last bit of public pressure you can apply. I mean, what they did to me was the agent and Terry concocted this sort of PR move where you get the people on your side chanting Terry, you show up for your autographs, you cut your Eastern Motors promo, you do all these different things to try to publicly pressure the team before you make a withdrawal. Because this hurts you a little bit in the court of public opinion, right? It goes from, all Terry wants is to play here, you guys. We love Terry. Terry forever. Number 17, we love him. Wait, you don't want to be here? You're going to lose a few people. But you just spent a few weeks trying to build yourself up and make the team the bad guy. And now you kind of go for the, if it's not going to be here, it's got to be somewhere else where I'm valued type angle. Again, nothing changes in terms of the team's obligation. Their negotiating stance is still, it's the team plus the CBA pushing in the opposite direction. You got to play football to get what you want. We got you this year 25, next year 28 and change with the franchise tag. Your move, right? Any offer that we make is not really going to supersede that. We've got the leverage here. We've got the hammer. You can do whatever you want in between, and you're doing it, and that's fine. You're not breaking any rules. But again, at the end of the day, that's the inescapable truth of all these type negotiations. So in terms of what it actually means, he's not being traded, so put that off the table. But to me, it's more symbolic that Terry, who doesn't do anything wrong, is now not really that different than the other guys who are going through contract stuff and demand trades and go through kind of the histrionics.
Yeah, I wonder how long we use that description of him. You know, Terry McLaurin, who's the ultimate team guy and does everything professionally and has been the good soldier his entire career, is holding out. You know, now it's is holding in. Now it's is requesting a trade.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you just woke up 3 weeks ago, he's no different than Ja'Marr Chase.
Yeah, this is,
he's no different than Justin Jefferson.
T. Higgins, Brandon Ayuk, the rest, I saw it.
It's just business. Mm-hmm. I mean, it doesn't make him a bad guy.
No.
But at some point, the whole best teammate ever, Mr. Professional, it doesn't really matter anymore if the result is the same. What's the line from The Departed? You know, when someone's holding a gun, good guys and bad guys don't matter. You remember the line?
Yeah.
Something along those lines. It's like, are you a good guy or a bad guy? But when you're looking down the barrel of a gun, what's the difference? Like, Terry McLaurin is a better pro and a less of a diva than almost every receiver in the league. But there's no receiver who's gone thus far this offseason. He's the guy that's kind of leading the way as far as agitation with your team. By the way, if you're a Commanders fan who's a little frustrated and down in the dumps about this, I've got some good news for you. Micah Parsons has requested a trade from the Dallas Cowboys. So we've got that going for us. If you're a little upset, it's sweet little Terry's not as sweet anymore. He's growing up. He's leaving the house. He's slamming doors. He's sneaking out at night.
That's right. Screw you, Mom and Dad.
He's acting out a little bit, right? Our sweet little prince is all grown up. Well, don't worry, because Jerry Jones is screwing up another negotiation in Dallas. This isn't over age, by the way. This isn't over a disagreement of, are you about to fall off? This is a young guy in his prime who's just clearly deserving of money. And Jerry Jones and the Cowboys are doing their thing where they don't pay him until the last possible second.
And he's taking pot shots in public at him, by the way.
Micah Parsons requesting a trade from the Cowboys.
Of all the players that I've ever negotiated with, Michael Parsons is as savvy and knowledgeable and understanding of his financial business relative to football as any player I've ever been around.
The Cowboys have to stop negotiating with this Michael Parsons guy and start focusing on Micah Parsons.
There's your big mistake. Just call Micah Parsons.
That's all you got to do.
This man named Michael, who keeps answering the phone, is savvy. He is intelligent. He is thoughtful and smart. Michael is a damn genius.
Well, when Micah said they haven't negotiated in months, I didn't realize he said, you know, it's because they're calling him and going, is Michael there? And he's saying no and hanging up. And that's kind of the
end.
Yeah,
there's no Michael here. That's why I was talking to Michael yesterday.
Let's talk to Pro Football Talk's Mike Florio. McLaurin, we'll talk about Michael Parsons. Is that right? Michael Parsons. Yeah. The stadium deal, everything going on in the NFL on Grant and Danny next.
Michael Parsons.